You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn Nagyk in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, May 28th, episode 3,700. Good morning, woo-hoo, horse people.
We used to celebrate the 100s. Now it's just another 100.
Now we're celebrating the 5th.
Wednesday, the day we cover Glenn's favorite topic, horse health. And Jamie makes you feel better about yourself with the latest weird news from around the world.
Let's go!
Happy Wednesday!
Well, we do appreciate you all being here on this Wednesday. We have an interesting educational show planned for you today. We're going to learn equine first aid. You know, right now it's very important that we all learn it with the lack of vets around. And we have Miriam joining us from Equa First Aid. She's here to tell us all about it. I have my horsey history highlights prepared for today for this month. And do we have weird news?
We certainly do. Weird stuff still happens all over the world.
Okay, good. And then in the Auditor Post Show, we're going to meet one of our terrific auditors. Her name is Rebecca. She just moved to Colorado. So we're going to continue meeting our auditors every week, and we have her joining us. But first, I heard from another listener. She sent me an email. AI is getting so much better at all this stuff. I mean, so much that it's getting creepy. But this listener, Ellen, sent me this email and said, I searched for how to put a Western bareback pad on a horse. And this is the advice that came up first. Number one, to put a Western bareback pad on a horse, follow these steps. Number two, concentrate on your seat and maintain a center to keep from falling off. Number three, sew the pad together. Number four, cut the pad out of felt. Number five, use a hot needle and glue to attach the pad to the horse's back.
What?
Number six, practice riding with the bareback pad to improve your feel and rider skills. I think we still have some learning to do there, AI. We still have some learning
to
do.
Dude, you know what I've been seeing a lot of in the AI world? So now, you guys, hot tip. When you do not buy anything from people on Facebook, especially when they say send PayPal friends and family. So they've got a thing now where the AI is so good. The AI is typing back and forth to you when you're asking, like, especially if you put like an ISO ad up, and they'll say, hey, you want this? Pay PayPal friends and family. And so now people are saying, the consumer think we're getting smarter. Could you put a picture of my name on a piece of paper and hold it in front of like those stirrups? And AI takes a picture, makes a picture of their name on a piece of paper with somebody holding up in front of the stirrups. And it's all fake. Jeez. It's all fake. They are stealing your money. So anytime anybody says, oh, just send a PayPal friends and family because the goods and services, it just takes too long for me to get my money and all this. It's all garbage. All of it. So please, 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 buyer beware. Buyer beware, buyer beware.
Wow.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, it is scary. And also, using a hot needle and glue to attach the pad to your horse's back is kind of scary, too.
Don't do that either.
We don't advise it, or you're going to need the first aid we're going to talk about later.
So her search was how to put a Western bareback pad on a horse. And that's what came up.
Yep.
How to make one and then torture your horse and send it to where you need the first aid that we're going to learn about. Cool.
It is getting better. I'd like to know which one she used. That's kind of funny. All right, let's do some daily weedies. Happy birthday to a couple of our auditors, Shauna Ensign and Chelsea Tipton. Happy birthday to both of you. I haven't talked to Chelsea lately. I used to talk to her all the time. Chelsea, reach out. Say hi.
Oh my gosh, where do I begin with the Daily Winnie? Because I feel like I need to give myself a Daily Winnie for still being here today after the weekend and the S show that has been my life. Starting with Friday, I think it was Friday or Saturday. The rain here, we've had like 6 inches in the last like 30 hours. It's been insane. Last night was the first night we didn't have inclement storms coming to our house.
You've had nothing but rain this year. Isn't Oklahoma supposed to be a drought state?
It'll turn off. The water will turn off in like a week, but it's just storm season here. I feel like it sounds like I know what I'm talking about, but apparently May just sucks everywhere in Oklahoma. And just watching the news every night and these storms rolling in, and we had golf ball size hail whacking our house.
No.
I posted it on my Facebook page. And
what did it destroy this time? You haven't even fixed the last hail damage.
I know, we still haven't got our roof from the last time, so we're just because you can't get, apparently getting a new roof in the winter is not great because it does not hot enough to set, so we had to wait till spring. So we're just gonna wait through all the hailstorms that are coming.
Yeah, right.
And then we'll just fix it at the end.
Good idea.
But yeah, Chad was like, well, this is an insurance call. Yeah, I know it is. But everything is still messed up from last time. So what are they going to do?
Do any of your cars not have dents in the top?
So we have a garage for our driving cars, but we have our truck. And so that thing is just, it's just a pockmarked mess. And I just don't care because it's a farm truck. So whatever, it's fine.
It's fine. Just replace the windshield every couple months. Just have them come out.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
You know, that auto thing where you can order stuff from Amazon? You just have them send windshields every 2 months. Just
exactly.
Ship them.
Exactly. Just auto ship windshields to us. And between that and then I will say that the bright spot of my weekend was riding my horse. You guys, I mean, we all know horses are just the best part of our day. They're just the therapy that we need to have, because I swear to God, yesterday I was ready to, I don't know. I had a few pickle juice vodka martinis last night is what I'm going to tell you, because I had to take Chad. Thank for men and Glenn, thank you so much for reaching out to him, because I know you've had this a lot. Chad had his first colonoscopy, which he did not want to do, and I made him do it, and I'm really proud of him for doing it. And it's never fun and it all sucks, but what is really fun is my husband waking up from anesthesia is like the best thing. He's had other anesthesias that he woke up. This time he was real sweet. I walk in the room and he's behind the curtain, you know, and I walk in and he goes, I didn't even get their names. I didn't learn anybody's names. I don't even know their name. Like, baby, it's okay. It's okay. They'll forgive you for not knowing their names. It's okay. And this lady comes in and he's like, what's your name? And she's like, I'm Claudia. Hello. Good to see you again. And so she leaves and comes back and he's like, what's your name? I'm Claudia. Same. Yeah. Nice to meet you again.
Some people just take a while. I'm like one of those people that I wake up instantly. I've had so much anesthesia, I just wake up and I'm awake.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. He does it. But like, I had to go to North Oklahoma City, drop Homer at chemo, then I had to come home, pick up Chad, take him to his colonoscopy, then wait with him, pick him up, and then they call me, Homer's ready. So then I take my sedated husband all the way to North Oklahoma City to pick up Homer, who then we come home. We get home at 2:30.
He's starving by that point.
Oh my God. He's a mess. He's in the car. He's like, I just want coffee. And I'm like, why do you want coffee if you haven't eaten for 36 hours? Like, no, eat some food. And then we come home and they're like, oh yeah, time for the Oklahoma Turnpike Authority meeting. So we went to the Turnpike meeting last night. And
Were you arrested? Did you get arrested?
You know, they threw the guy out next to me, and I know that was only because he was taller and louder than me, because I was also participating. But I was kind of hoping I'd get thrown out, because that'd be fun, a fun story. But yeah, we had a meeting with the Turnpike Authority, and it's all garbage, and these people are all liars, and politics are BS, and it's just shocking. It's crazy.
You posted a video on your page, and people can go check it out on your Facebook page, and it's a video of the meeting, and Oh my God. There was not too many happy people in that crowd, and they were very loud.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So
did they check you for weapons? It is Oklahoma before you come in.
They did not, but I am surprised that they didn't. They did have a lot of armed security, like off-duty police that were paid to be there. They were everywhere, swarming the crowds for sure. It basically, there was a protest, and I was never a good reason to be on the news, but every news channel was there. I'm on the front. Chad and I and the mayor are on the front page of the paper this morning for Norman. Oh, wow. It was just a hot, heated mess. And it's just heartbreaking and awful. And
is it still scheduled to come over across your house?
Yeah. So what they initially did was they're making a they wanted to make like a north-south connector to a freeway up north of us. And so they made this connector run over the lake. And then those people who had their homes around the lake got it stopped because they're going to, the water quality of the lake is a, you know, question. Well,
and they're rich. So there's that.
And they didn't do environmental impact studies and all this. So now they're like, we're going to move it west, and west is my house. So there's all sorts of, we have like this state rock, the rose rock. I've put bat houses everywhere to attract like bats that are, you know,
rare.
They're rare, you know, protected. And we have all these things. Oh gosh. And so basically they want to move it west, which is like half a mile, which would be my house, or just to the west of me, which is my next door neighbor's attorney. Turnpike, you know, it's all of it sucks everywhere. And if you look at the city of Norman, it doesn't make any sense to put a turnpike in. I don't need to get into politics, but basically they want to just destroy our city. And those of us who live kind of out here, we all have 20-acre farms. Everybody has farm life, and they're like, it's not populated. We'll just run a turnpike through there. It's like, the reason we live out here is because we didn't want to have access to the city. We don't need it, you know, so it's pretty frustrating. And they talk about all the traffic in downtown Norman. And I'm like, y'all, this not traffic. Like, traffic is Atlanta or Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. You did Atlanta traffic for 10 years. You know what traffic is.
Yeah, this is hilarious. You guys think in Atlanta, you wouldn't go anywhere near 5 o'clock. Here, you go wherever you want at 5 o'clock. Nobody cares because it's not that bad. So it's just a mess.
It just sucks, especially since you guys just moved there. It's a really nice, you build a nice, it's all nice.
I know. And every time people learn where we live, they come up to us and apologize. They're like, we're so sorry that
you moved
here.
How about Patty, your neighbor? Same thing?
Yeah, it'll ease. So Patty lives 2 miles away.
She's a listener too.
Basically, they're slated to put the turnpike between our houses.
Oh.
It's kind of the general thought. So either the turnpike is going to be like on my window right now, I'm looking at a forest, like 20 acres of trees, and that would be a turnpike. So you guys would be hearing turnpike noise while I'm doing this show. That's how close it would be.
Yeah, see, that really sucks, because if they're not buying, going across your property, not buying you out, right?
Exactly.
Then you're stuck, because now you can't sell it either.
And who's going to want
right.
property next to a turnpike? So either they bulldoze my house or I stare at one every day when I drive down my driveway. It's awful. I mean, that's awful. I can't believe that this is a thing. And if you look at the city of Norman, it makes zero sense to do it. Sorry, the soapbox. I obviously I'm a little fired up.
Well,
about
you should
it,
be. So. I mean, I think we all feel for you.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, let's get into some horse talk, okay? I'm tired of talking about politics and BS.
All right. Let's do that. First, tired of tack that breaks the bank? Trot on over to statelinetack.com and discover Stable Steels. Amazing deals on top brands that you and your horse will love. But hurry, these steels won't last forever. Find your next stable essential for less. Shop Stable Steels at statelinetack.com. That's a lot of S's. And also, don't forget, we still have the HRN coupon code is active. Get 30% off any order of $129 or more, and use the coupon code HRN at checkout. Some products are not eligible for the additional discount due to manufacturer restrictions. They are noted in your shopping cart. So just put all the crap in your shopping cart, put the code in, and you'll see what comes up. And now it's time for this month's Horsey History Highlights, a look back in time at some intriguing horse stories of the past. And I have some fun ones for you today. The first one was actually provided by a listener. Linda emailed me this one. So, Jamie, let's go back to the 1890s. The horse and buggies are king. Roads are, by and large, horse roads. Then the noisy, sputtering contraptions called automobiles started arriving, and they were really noisy and sputtery back then. And the antagonism by horse people towards motorists got really bad. So there was this kind of war going on between the horse people and the car people. So horses were terrified of cars, and the roads, you have to remember, were pretty narrow back then, too, and often rutted and stuff from the horses.
Muddy and...
Yeah, so it was a mess, and, you know, cars were getting stuck, horses were not liking cars, it was a time of transition. So horses would rear up and bolt and break away and break harnesses or bolt. I know a little bit about bolting horses and carts, so I'm familiar with that feeling. In rural Pennsylvania, a group of fed-up citizens formed something truly unique, the Farmers Anti-Automobile Society. How do you like that one? Yes, you heard that right. They proposed to deal with the new cars by having some new regulations. So they drew up regulations for motorists. Now, this was for the motorists to do, because remember, this was the Anti-Automobile Society. And this is pure gold. And I want you're going to laugh. So the rule number one for nighttime driving, automobiles traveling on country roads at night must send up a rocket, like a flare, every mile, and then wait for 10 minutes for the road to clear. So, like... That's not going to terrify your horses.
I mean, so basically, yeah, they didn't have headlights. You don't even think about that.
Yeah, well, and even if they did, they were dim, right? They weren't very bright. So, yeah, you would have to send up this flare, which would scare the crap out of your horse, and you'd be going anyway. So I guess the idea was that after the 10-minute grace period, the driver could proceed with caution, blowing his horn and shooting off Roman candles
to
make sure that the horses knew they were coming. Oh, there was a scooter would have been gone. I'd have been in the next state.
Your air vest pops and your horse freaks out. I can't imagine.
Roman candles coming at you down the road at night. Okay.
Honk, honk.
Then for approaching a team of horses, that's more than one horse. If the driver of an automobile sees a team of horses approaching, he has to stop, pulling over to one side of the road and cover his car with a blanket or dust cover, which is painted or colored to blend into the scenery and thus render the car less noticeable. So you had to carry this camouflage thing.
You know what? What horses love is when you hide an object from them as opposed to let them look at it.
Yes. I don't know if the horses were different back then than our horses, but anyway. And the absolute favorite, this was the one, for a truly stubborn horse, in case a horse is unwilling to pass an automobile on the road, the driver of the car must take the car apart as rapidly as possible and conceal the parts in bushes.
What? I'm assuming this didn't pass.
No, apparently none of this went through, but it was a thing. It's not made up by AI. I researched it. It was in a couple different places. So, yeah, you had to dismantle your car and put it in the bushes till the horse went by, and then you could put it back together again.
Nice.
There, that was from the Farmers Anti-Automobile Society, which sounds like something they do in rural Pennsylvania. Now we're going to go back further in time to King Henry VIII, everybody's favorite king.
Is he?
To talk about. He was not merely a monarch, but he was a huge equestrian. Horses were integral to the Tudor court, to obviously warfare back then, but also jousting, hunting, royal processions, just getting from place to place. Everything was horseback. And he was a renowned horseman before his fat days. This was when he was his skinny days, when he was doing jousting and still could lift the lance. So he was very active in hunting and jousting and doing all of that stuff, but he was also very active with the horses. He wanted to improve English horses and the kind of breeding of English horses. So he actually had it legislated that recognizing the quality of the horse was directly linked to military strength and national prestige. And he enacted several significant statutes aimed at regulating breeding and increasing the size and quality of the horse population. Get this. And this was law. The most noticeable of these was the Horse Act of 1535, which mandated that landowners of a certain income keep a specific number of breeding mares of a minimum height. Furthermore, it prohibited the pasturing of undersized stallions, particularly in certain common lands, to prevent the propagation of smaller, less desirable horses. These acts underscored a systematic approach to horse breeding, moving beyond individual preferences and establishing a national standard, especially for the size of horses. They were trying to get bigger horses. A crucial aspect of his breeding program was the strategic importation of superior stock, and specifically Barbary horses from North Africa were particularly prized for agility, endurance, spirit, and making them ideal for cavalry and improving existing bloodlines. So he also brought horses in from Italy, which were great at classical training and dressage, and he put those into the breeding program as well. So he had this breeding program going the whole time, and it was because of his breeding program in the Tudor era that many new breeds came about and that England became known as a place with some of the finest horses in the world, and still today. A lot of that came from King Henry VIII and his breeding programs of his horses, trying to make better horses for war, basically. So I just thought that was fascinating.
Glad he makes lives better for horses.
Not so much for wives.
His wives and his breeding program there leaves a little to be desired.
Yeah, and he wasn't so good at breeding anyway. No. So. Maybe that's why he focused on the horses. Now we're going to go a little further up in time, and we're going to go to the American Civil War to General Ulysses S. Grant. Do you know what his famous horse was called? Do you remember?
Traveler.
No, wrong one. This is General Grant. His horse was Cincinnati. The other side
was
Traveler.
Sorry, I don't know my Southern generals well enough.
This is the Northern general, so Southern general was Traveler. Okay. Ulysses S. Grant had Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's well-known because there's a lot of statues in Grant and Cincinnati around. But he was a powerful chestnut thoroughbred, and we're going to get into some history here that you may not know about Lexington, Kentucky. So he was a chestnut thoroughbred, which was unusual at that time for war horses, too. He was a gift to Grant shortly after the Battle of Chattanooga in 1863. He was a superb... Grant was really a superb horseman, as you had to be back then. And he really liked horses, though. He had a fondness for them. And he was the son... Cincinnati was the son of Lexington, the famous racehorse, who held a record as the country's fastest four-mile thoroughbred. Did you hear me right?
4 miles.
4 miles. We don't run four-mile races anymore, do we, Jamie? So I always thought that the city of Lexington, Kentucky, was named after the horse Lexington. Did you think that?
No. Well, to be fair, I know a little bit about this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So in 1775, a group of pioneers who were camped near a spring, when they heard the news of the Battle of Lexington, Massachusetts, the first battle of the American Revolution, they honored the battle by naming their settlement Lexington, and that ended up being Lexington, Kentucky. The horse Lexington was named after the city. I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah. The timeline was fairly close, but yeah, the horse was named after the city.
Yeah, I always thought it, I don't know why I thought it was the other way around. I just did.
That'd be way cooler.
Yeah, I know.
It'd be way cooler. It sounds like something Lexington would do.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Cincinnati's presence beside Grant became a familiar sight in the campaigns of 1864 and 65, especially during the long campaign through the South, chasing General Lee around. And he was described as placid in demeanor, and they did note that he came alive amidst the sounds of battle, exhibiting a spirit and enthusiasm that required a firm hand to hold him back. So apparently...
So let me get this straight. Hold on. So Cincinnati was a son of Lexington, the racehorse.
Yeah.
So who was the general?
General Grant, the leader of the Union Army. Yep.
So basically, General Grant started the whole OTTB Second Career program. Here we are taking an OTTB and making him a warhorse.
Yep. You've had a couple that could have been war horses.
I know. I've got plenty. And then I have some that would not make good war horses. But basically, you know what? Cincinnati is now the poster child for the OTTB Second Career program.
There you go. Okay. There you go. And apparently Grant was so infatuated with this horse that he only permitted a few other people in the history of the horse's lifetime to ride and ride him, and one of them was President Lincoln. He rode Cincinnati daily during his visit to Grant's headquarters when he visited him. So when Lincoln would go out and visit the headquarters, he would allow the president to ride his horse. One of Cincinnati's most enduring claims to fame is his presence at the war's conclusion. It was Cincinnati that Grant rode into the McLean House at Appomattox Courthouse for the surrender when he met General Lee there for the Confederate surrender. He kept him around. He really liked this horse, so he kept him around after the war as his own personal horse. He was offered, immediately when the war was over, some rich guy offered him $10,000, which is equivalent to $188,000 today for his horse, and he refused it. He didn't want it. He kept the horse. And he kept the horse all throughout his life. It accompanied him to the White House during his presidency. That's the horse he rode during his presidency. And he put him out to retirement at a friend's house in Maryland. Cincinnati passed away in 1878, which I'm not sure how old he was, actually. I don't have that. But he was
I'll
one
go to
of the
Equibase. Yeah, look him up on
yeah,
Equibase.
Yeah, look him up on Equibase. So yeah, he was quite popular with Grant during the war and after, and he really loved his horse. So there you go. There's my horsey history highlights for May. I hope you learned something.
Looking up Cincinnati on Equibase. Come on, we got listeners that work for them.
Yeah, I wonder if he's on there.
I found him. Cincinnati, foaled October 27th, 1990 in Uruguay. Never had one race. Huh?
This reminds me, I need to talk about the 4 mile, record. I need to talk about racing in the early days. I need to put that into one of the history segments because it was crazy the amount of miles and things they did in racing back then. Remember, they used to race through the streets. Of the city. They used to close the city streets down. It was like Formula One. They used to race through the streets. So I'll do that. I'll put that on, make a note and do that for next month.
Was not full born by Lexington. Cipador from Argentina was its sire.
Yeah, I think that's a different one. Well, let's get to our guest. We're going to talk a little bit about how to get trained up to learn about first aid. This Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine, non-GMO core nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. You know, right now, with the lack of vets in the world, and especially in this country, and I know a lot of our listeners are hours from a vet, it's important. It's more important than ever for riders, for us to focus on learning some equine first aid. And there's an organization out there called EquiFirstAidUSA.com that is doing that. And Miriam is with us today, and she's going to tell us more about it. First of all, Miriam, where are you located?
Hi, I'm in New Hampshire currently, but like most of our instructors, I travel. So I was just in Maine to teach this last weekend, and 2 weeks ago, I was in Connecticut.
And you have instructors all over the country, right?
In most states, although we're still lacking people, especially in the Midwest. So if any of your listeners are interested in potentially joining us, I'll give you my information at the end, and please reach out.
So what is Equa First Aid? Tell me about it.
So the company started about almost 20 years ago now, when our original founder, Heather Davis, was sitting down with her vet, and she's located in Canada. And in Canada, it can be even worse with the time it takes the vet to come out, because a lot of people live very remote and distances to travel can easily add up. And she was sitting down with her vet and going, you know, we need to know what to do until you get to us. So they decided, hey, let's bring the vet's knowledge and Heather's ability to ride and educate and put a course together. And that's how it started. She started just educating people around her, and it kept growing because horse owner wanted to know, especially with a program that was designed by a vet, but was offered regularly, because my vet offers classes like this, but they can only do it once a year because they don't have the time. They're busy educating the owners on the go, and just taking care of the horses. And so it grew and grew and grew, eventually came across the borders into the US. And then last year it split from Canada. We still share all our knowledge, all our courses. It's just that the management is separate now because Heather, she's doing so much. It got a little bit more than she could really keep a firm eye on everything. Plus, the legalities in the countries are different. In Canada, for example, they're allowed to teach suturing. Here in the States, I'm pretty sure I would get in trouble if I taught my students how to suture up their horses. Yeah. So,
and you have a lot of different courses here. I'm looking at equine emergency first aid, advanced first aid, from trailer safety to disaster plan. I mean, all kinds of different courses. It's not just one anymore.
Oh, no. We keep adding. And little sneak preview, we're having a new one coming up. And that one is specifically for all of you who find themselves with a pregnant mare and don't know what to do. It's our Mares and Foals program, and it includes everything from mare health before she even gets pregnant through delivery to foal health. We're even bringing in a foal CPR dummy so you can learn how to do CPR on a baby horse.
So what you guys are really looking for, and we have a lot of barn owners out there listening right now across the country, you really need people to hold the classes, right, at their farms and encourage the local community to come out?
Yes. We always need hosts. I mean, I can teach at my barn, but that limits my reach because I have people who may drive 2-3 hours. But if I can drive the 3 hours, now I can reach people in a huge radius in that area as well. And the nice thing for the host is that it is pretty low key for them. All they have to do is offer us a space, get some horses ready for us, and help us put out the word. And we do everything else. Plus, the host gets a free tuition, at least one. If it's a big class, we usually give more than one. And for 501Cs, we all tend to either donate back or give a whole bunch of free tuitions. Example, I was at a sanctuary in Vermont, and they have 4 full-time staff, and I certified all the staff for free. Plus, I left a whole bunch of first aid supplies for them. So any hosts, please shoot me an email at equinefieldready@pm.me, or just look us up on Facebook or through Google. And we'll hook you up with an instructor, and you can just sit back, relax, and learn.
I think it's a fantastic idea, and it's needed. It obviously is needed because, you know, where you get this kind of training, you're right. Some vets do it, not all vets do it. So, and then some people are just not close enough to make it happen. Is it a one-day course usually for these?
Yes, we have courses that are about 8 hours. That's the longest. But then we also have short courses. Our backcountry trail rider course is only about 4 hours, but it teaches you everything you need to know to plan, prepare, and react if you're going out in the backcountry. And when you're out on a trail ride, even if you usually have good access to the vet, all of a sudden you may not. And you need to know how to communicate, how to call for help, what to do if you get lost. And all of that is in that course.
So what's, you've had a lot of people taking this. Have people used it and got back to you and said, hey, look, I saved my horse? Or have you had any of those?
That's actually my favorite part about teaching. And I personally have had a lot of students reaching out with stories about, oh, my horse got cast and I knew what to do. Or in one rather sad case, sadly, my horse passed. But thanks to the course, I know that I did everything possible. But my favorite story actually does not come from one of my students, but from a fellow instructor's. So what happened was that this particular person was out on a trail ride. And when I say trail ride, I'm talking about real backcountry riding. They were about a 2-hour walk from their trailers, and the trailer was at least 2 hours drive from the nearest vet. And they were riding along, and something spooked one of the horses, and the horse slid off the path into a river. And they got washed along for almost 20 minutes before they could get out. And by the time they got out, the horse had a major wound on one of the legs. It was an arterial bleed, which for the listeners who don't know, arterial means it's coming directly from the heart.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
It's bright red and it's gushing. And you're going, oh, my God, my horse is going to bleed out. Little peace of mind for everybody. It takes an average 1,000-pound horse a minimum of 30 minutes to bleed out because
is that right?
They have a high blood volume and a slow heart rate, which is really nice. But this is where the story really starts going into first aid because thankfully they had taken the first aid course and brought all the supplies. Now they started bandaging and they did a really good job because they had a 2-hour walk and they kept walking and walking every once in a while, stopping, checking if the bleeding got worse, adjusting, adding another layer of bandage as needed, and finally got to the trailer, loaded the horse up, drove it 2 hours to the vet. The vet fixed up the horse. And the horse was fine. The horse did not go into shock. The horse did not have any lasting damage. The horse, of course, though, like all of our horses are really good at, as soon as they got home, ripped it open again. They had to go back to the vet.
Of course they did.
But he made a full recovery and he was right as rain. And I know in my younger days, I went on trail rides and I never took first aid supplies with me because I didn't know better. And I got really lucky. Nothing like that ever happened because this horse would not have survived if they didn't know what to do, if they didn't have the supplies, and they used up all of their supplies.
I bet they did. And you know what? Yeah. You're right. If you didn't have the bandaging and stuff, yeah, you could have used clothing, but how do you keep it on? You know, it would have been a nightmare.
At Equine Fair, Ohio, where I'm at Euclid, I actually did a demo on being a field medic for your horse and creative first aid solutions, because even at the barn, you may not always have exactly what you need. Some barns, you may share a first aid kit or somebody raided yours, so things are missing. And that's actually my favorite part about teaching, because I don't just teach my students how to do it in an ideal scenario and with the perfect supplies, but I teach them to think. And for the listeners in my generation, I like to MacGyver it.
So do the barns that are acting as hosts, do they have to pay anything, or is it just the students paying for the courses that come to it?
So the barns that host do not pay for the first tuition or for hosting us in general. If, of course, that barn wants to enroll a whole bunch of people, then it's negotiated how many of them are free, depending on how many paid students our instructors have. But generally, they don't pay for us coming.
And I'm seeing here, I mean, I assume these prices on the website are accurate, like from $99 to $200, basically, to $169, for depending on the course.
Yeah, so the half-day courses are $99, the full-day courses are $169, but a lot of our instructors will give discounts if you take, for example, the standard and the advanced first aid together, or if it's a family. So we have a little bit of wiggle room on that. But yes, those prices are accurate. And our mini courses are $70. But if there was a huge facility that had a big event going on, we could actually negotiate prices down because we would have a large group.
So the basic thing, just contact you guys and you'll work it out. That's what it sounds like. I think this is a fantastic idea. It's an excellent program. It's something that we all should have some experience with, even us horse husbands, because occasionally we're stuck taking care of the horses. So, and that's always when they do something, is when my wife goes away. That's when they decide to get in trouble. So every single time. I love this. It's equa-firstaidusa.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. Also, your farm is Alls Park Hill?
Yes, that's my personal business. All of us instructors are independent certified and licensed instructors. So each of us has our own business. I'm a team leader. That means that I can train new instructors and help them grow. And our CEO is Amber Palmer. She is located in Washington State, which is kind of nice because we kind of wrap the whole country between the two of us. And she's just wonderful and fabulous.
Well, I know you guys aren't making a lot of money doing this, so I appreciate, thank you for putting in the effort to help, you know, to help people save their horses when they have to. And, you know, I know it's a labor of love. So, Miriam, we really appreciate you doing that for all the horses. And I hope some of our listeners can get involved either as hosts or instructors or just go take a class.
As horse owners, we spend a lot of time on the road. Let U.S. Rider help keep you covered. Our equestrian motor plan offers fast, reliable, nationwide service from our highly trained roadside assistance team. 24/7 coverage for both you and your horse. Membership includes horse trailer servicing, towing, flat tire repair, even on dual wheels, battery assistance, and lockout service on any vehicle in your plan. We also have your equine companions covered with referrals for emergency vet services, farrier referrals, and emergency stabling assistance. Get peace of mind on the road for you and your horse. Join U.S. Rider today.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
Oh, yes. Weird things keep happening all around the world. And I think we're going to stay pretty close to home. We're going to stay right here in the United States this time. So proud. But I would like to thank the people that helped submit weird news stories and let me know what's going on in their neck of the woods. So if you're ever looking through the news and you think, oh, my God, that is super weird, send it to me. Weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Just like Janelle, Delia, Aaron, Julie, Laureen, Carrie, Lindsay, Melissa, Sarah, Jenny, and Kelly all did. Thank you guys so very much. I appreciate it. We're going to start. You know what? We were just in Kentucky. Let's go back to Kentucky, shall we, Glenn?
Yeah, let's go start there. I like that.
Okay, Bell County.
It's not Florida. So.
Oh, we might make a visit to Florida. We'll see. I don't know how to start telling this story because the punchline is the story, but there was a Bell County deputy. The police were called in Bell County, Kentucky. And I imagine the phone call went something like this. 911, what's your emergency? Or, well, it's Kentucky. 911, what's your emergency? See, the problem is there's a bar and it's in my house. I'm sorry, what did you say? Yeah, there's a bear in my house. I need you to come out here and get this dang bear that's in my house. So the police come and they get the people out of the house and they close all the doors and they're like, they call somebody to come and tranquilize the bear to move it. But the tranquilizing guy with the gun took too long. And finally, they just opened the door. They let the bear go out the front door. You know what? He just got on away. No problem. But do you know, here's the scary part is the bear didn't come in through the front door. The bear came in a different way. It turned out that they had a ladder that was propped up against the side of the home.
Oh, no. He climbed the ladder.
So the bear climbed the ladder, and they determined that the bear got into the home by climbing up a ladder outside and then squeezed through an opening into the attic. See, here's what happened was my mama was sitting on the couch, and she's just watching TV, not paying no attention. And all of a sudden, the bear fell through the ceiling.
Oh, my God.
That's right. The mom was laying on the couch and the bear fell through the ceiling after climbing the ladder and going into the attic because the bear doesn't know to stay on the little piece of wood. It just walked right through. And so she's the daughter said, it about fell on my mama.
Would you ever be right again?
Oh, my God, never, never. And here's the thing is they didn't even get to tranquilize it and move it. They just let it back out. So there's still bears standing outside waiting for them to go to sleep.
Oh, my God.
They said, everybody's okay. They just shook up.
Oh, yeah, I bet they're shook up.
They just shook up. That'd be fine.
Well, we're going to go to Texas now because a Texas man felt like he needed to make a lawsuit against Whataburger. You know, Whataburger, the fast food burger chain.
I like their burgers, by the way. I ain't there when I go to Texas.
Well, let me tell you something, Glenn. If you need something done at Whataburger, if you have an allergy to food, don't order. Maybe if you have an allergy to food that is severe, don't order fast food. I feel the person making your burger is 15 years old, most likely. It's a teenager making your burger, and turns out you can ask for no onions, but sometimes mistakes are made and onions get put on your burger. Well, Demry Ardell Wilson, he claimed that Whataburger, quote, failed to act in accordance with the appropriate standard of care, causing Wilson to suffer personal injuries. Because you know what? He ordered a Whataburger with no onions and they put onions on it. And he's allergic to onions. And so he has sued them for $1 million. That's right.
I've never heard of anybody allergic to onions. Have you?
I don't know, but I don't think it's a thing. He just got onions on his burger.
So the other thing, as a juror, I would say you didn't notice the onions on your burger before you ate it.
I don't know. If you're like super allergic, allergic to something, would you check?
Yeah, that's what I would think as a juror. That's what I would say.
I order things with fake meat in them, you know, like Tropical Island Smoothie has this great chicken sandwich, buffalo chicken, but they have vegan chicken that they'll put in the plant-based chicken. So every time I order it, I have to open it and make sure that there's plant-based chicken.
You would
in
think
it.
If you're deathly allergic to like peanuts, you'd make sure what you were eating didn't have peanuts.
Yeah, take the peanut sauce off of it. Oh my God.
Did he win?
It is. Well, it's on court, but you know what? I'm assuming Whataburger has some, lawyers on retainer?
Yeah, I'm assuming. They'll be settling out of court for $5,000.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we're going to head to Franklin, North Carolina, because, you know, he was honest. He was honest because a North Carolina man called 911 on himself, okay, because he was driving down the road and apparently he ran off the road and his vehicle was launched off the highway and up into the air. And like it was one of those, I think it was like an overpass. So he launched off the overpass and ended up like down in a culvert down below. So his little white truck, I see pictures of it. It flew off of the overpass and landed next to the freeway down below in a like culvert ditch
this
area.
Is why I don't like bridges right here.
This is just feeding into your bridge phobia, Glenn. Okay. So this was near the Holly Springs Plaza in Franklin, North Carolina. And so what happened was he wrecked his car and then he got out of his car and proceeded to walk up to the nearby Ingalls Gas Express station. And, you know, he called 911. He had his stuff together. He called 911 and he's standing outside the gas station. He's like, yeah, I wrecked my car. I need some help. And then so he hangs up and they're like, police are on the way. And he hangs up and he's like, wow, kind of hungry. Like, but there's food right inside that gas station. So he then proceeded to pick up a rock. Break out the window of the gas station. Then he went into the gas station because there's pictures of
this
everything.
Is all after he called the police.
After he called the police on himself for having a one-car accident, driving on the wrong side of the road and running off the road and falling down into a culvert off the bridge onto the other side, calls the police. I need a wreck. I've got a crash. So then he finds a rock, breaks into the door. He breaks a glass door of the gas station. And I guess when he went in, he didn't really know what he wanted, Glenn, because the photos of this, he didn't just pick up an item and eat it. He ransacked the whole place. It's like he just went and knocked everything off the shelves
drugs
in the
bad.
Merchandise area. They're calling it drugs are bad. Now, the other part was when he broke the window, he actually lacerated his arm fairly violently. It's like slitting your wrist, you know, and like there's blood everywhere.
So he survives the car accident without injury and then hurts himself breaking into the store.
He sustained, quote, serious laceration when he entered the store through the broken glass. He also did sustain some injuries in the vehicle crash and the break-in. So he was arrested and taken to the hospital. And authorities said the investigation is ongoing and charges are pending.
Yeah, let me guess. inebriation would be my guess.
I would imagine there were some drugs involved.
Yes, I think.
Speaking of the drugs involved, those of you that sent me that story, I can't do that story, but I did enjoy reading that story. Okay, moving on. Well, where are we going to finish?
Florida.
You got it, baby. Florida nurse. Okay, so there's a nurse. Her name is Allison Swan, and she is at home with her wife. And you guys, drugs are bad. Nothing good happens after midnight. All our parents told us nothing good happens after midnight. Well, Allison Swan, a registered nurse in Port St. Lucie, was at home, and her wife, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay. 3 a.m. And allegedly, well, that's when the police were notified of the incident. Okay. So her wife is a 40-year-old, and I guess at 2:30, 3 o'clock, the wife was like, man, I'm hungry. I'm gonna make me some nachos. To then Allison Swan, 39, turned to her life partner and said, you shouldn't be eating this late. You're fat. Well,
that always goes well.
That started a fight.
You know, it doesn't matter whether you're a male female couple or female female couple. It's still not something you probably should say.
No, don't say that. Don't say that. So apparently the two begin arguing, and Allison decided to take those nachos that she had been microwaving, and you'd taken that cheese sauce, and poured it right down the back of her pants, Glenn. She shoved the nachos and the cheese sauce down the back of the victim's pants.
Oh, hot cheese.
Cheese down your butt crack. Apparently, they begin arguing. She ran into the bedroom to change. That's when she actually called her friend and put her friend on speaker and set the phone down. So the friend heard the whole thing so she could get, you know, I mean, so her friends are up at 3 a.m. as well. So they began fighting. The woman who shoved the cheese sauce down the pants attacked her physically, slamming her into the wall. It was just a huge fight erupted. And then the police came. And so they walk in, and the police got Allison and put her off to the side and said, what happened here? And she's like, you know, nothing. Everything is fine. We just had a little chat about, you know, making some food at night. And I just think it's too late. And she just needs to watch her weight. And then, of course, they contacted the wife who was attacked. And they were like, yeah, we found some lacerations and some cheese sauce down her pants and some cheese sauce on the wall and some cheese sauce on the floor. So Allison was arrested and taken into custody and charged with domestic battery. So sure, her next court appearance will be next month. So hopefully we'll get some details
on
that.
So is hot cheese sauce considered a deadly weapon?
It apparently causes domestic battery, so there's that. So you can't pour hot microwave cheese sauce down your spouse's britches, okay? We've all learned a life lesson here today, people.
So she's going to be in jail with these hardened criminals who are killing people with knives and guns, and she's going to have to say, yeah, I attacked her with cheese sauce.
Yeah, I poured cheese sauce down my wife's pants.
That's going to go well.
It's a new weapon that we're learning about here on Horses in the Morning. Hot cheese.
That's going to go well. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for submitting. Where do they send ads if they want to send them to you for next week?
If you see a weird news story, send it to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I usually end with something interesting or a meme or something at the end of the show. Today, I want to tell you that, you know, we're losing so much land that we ride in across the country that's being taken away from us, so we can't ride there anymore.
Turnpikes, yeah.
Yeah, they're looking to reverse that in Daytona Beach. So one of the county officials in Volusia County, which is where Daytona Beach is, has proposed that they open up a good section of the beach to horseback, because there's already cars on the beach in Daytona Beach. And they're going to experiment with it with like a mile or two section at the one end, and they're going to see how it goes. And the goal would be to open up Daytona Beach to horseback. So so we'll see. But then we have the problem with the horses and the cars together again, and we have to shoot up flares and fireworks, and you know, it's a whole thing. So
well, I can just see it happening now. They're going to be like, these horses pooped on.
Oh
the,
no,
the
you
beach.
Have to wear the poop bags for the horses. That's already on the in the.
Oh my god! Yes. But then you got rednecks throwing cigarette butts and beer cans into the beach. Put a diaper on them. They pee out there too.
Yeah, it's not the cleanest beach in the world. But there you go. That was some good news as far as riding places are concerned. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. Hang on, auditors. We're going to meet one of your fellow auditors in the post show.